Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Corey Lofi, alongside the star of the show, Mr. Arbor Joe himself. Joe, here we are about to hit Thanksgiving week. Things are exciting. Couple good trade shows going on. I'm cutting back on my travel, but I'm keeping the spirits high. How are you doing? How's November? How's deer season going for you?
Well, the deer are still safe. It's deer. It's like everything else in life. You get what you got out of it. You got to put time in it. It's like you have to serve your time to bag that big deer, and you just can't. Don't get me wrong. A lot of people show up and they're lucky. They walk out in the woods, you know, lean over on a tree, take a piss, and a buck steps out in the middle of the path and they pop one. But I didn't get enough time in there to prep, because of travel for work. We had TCI. Remember last year we talked about TCIA, where the A went. Great show, big show. Charlotte, North Carolina. The weather was nice. It's a good show, man. We meet so many people, and even our guests tonight, I had a chance to sit down and chat with them at that show. And it kind of what prodded me is I'm very blessed to know these guys that we're gonna bring on tonight, and the passion they have for the industry and a different view of the industry, which I think is so important that we get caught up in everything else. So that's going to be kind of what we're going to chat about tonight with these guys. It's going to be fun.
Well, I'm excited for it. I know when you were at the expo, you shot me a text with a link to their website, and I watched the video. So I'll congratulate them when we bring them on here in just a bit. But the video that they shot and how they're positioning their business, and I think more importantly, how they're looking at arboriculture and what they're doing truly for the industry and the trees is pretty remarkable. So I'll let you introduce these two gentlemen and kind of take it from here.
Yeah, I actually met them when they were working in the semi-big arb world for a good friend of mine. And they're amazing arborists. I don't want to say just because they're young and energetic. They are young, but they're ahead of their time. they're actually ahead of their time. And it kind of reminds me of a younger me, you know, when I'm like, well, why are we doing it that way? Why would that be stupid? Let's do it this way. Nope, that's the way we've been doing it for 100 years. That's the way you got to do it. To have a couple of young, up-and-coming, pretty talented arborists asking the same questions I did 30 years ago is pretty cool. So without going any farther, let's bring on Jeremiah and Jack with Tree First. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us,
guys. Yeah, what a great setup. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, that was a good intro.
Well, you know, we've got to know each other quite a bit through the years. And we had a lot of good conversations through the years, but I really truly do admire and love what you guys are trying to accomplish. So that's why I felt it was important for the world to get your side of why you're doing what you're doing. So before we go any farther, why don't you guys take a couple minutes each and just kind of, you know, we always want to figure out why we got into the world of wood, you know, the tree world, or, you know, and it comes right down to you guys going on your own and naming your own company. What a brilliant name for a tree care company.
Thanks. Yeah, there's an interesting story behind that. I'll leave that one for Jeremiah to reveal. But I'm Jack. Jack Novak. I'm co-founder and arborist of Tree First. And my journey into arboriculture started in forestry. So I was with the United States Forest Service doing, you know, forestry type work. And then eventually I kind of fell in love with the idea of managing single trees, and they started standing out more. They started standing out more. So I turned to a focus more on urban trees and in an urban setting and kind of like the micro ecosystem that each individual tree has. And, okay, you know, fast forward through a lot of years of, you know, work, and here we are now.
With the Forest Service, did you get, where at in the, like, where, how do you, How do you get a job in the Forest Service? Is that what you went to school for? Or?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I kind of glanced over that. I have a background. I have a bachelor's in outdoor education and earth sciences. So for my internship, I started off as a Forest Service trail technician and then did some wilderness firefighting, did some trail building, did wildlife management areas and surveying. Timber surveys, all that kind of stuff. They get you a well-rounded experience.
Awesome. Where was that at? Where was most of your experience at?
That was on the west side of Michigan in Baldwin. So I was with the Baldwin White Cloud District.
Wow. You think about Michigan, you think about the U.S. Forest Service and all that, the smoke jumpers and all the cool stuff. You think about out west, but out west of Michigan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was just in Michigan. So, yeah, probably where you're going to look at some deer coming up here.
Yeah, not too far away. I drive right through it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Jeremiah.
Hey, man.
Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, first, before I say that, I know that you said that, we remind you of you, and we got to say how grateful we are to be able to have a resource like you when we're testing ideas out, when we're asking questions, because we know that we can count on you to give us the straight answer. And you always disclose where the boundaries are, where we don't know something. And that's something that we really value. And thanks.
Oh, thank you guys. It's easy to help someone when they really have a desire to learn. So anytime.
Cool, man. I'm Jeremiah Sandler. Also arborist and co-founder of Tree First. To be honest, I kind of always knew that I wanted to work with plants to some degree, but while I was in college for horticultural science, I met an arborist there, shout out Jeremy Ogrizovich, and he introduced me to the world of arboriculture. And if anybody out there knows Ogriz, you know that he's kind of a wild man. He's got a great heart, but can be a difficult person to teach. But he was able to kind of sculpt roughly my outlook on trees as something that if you're going to be good at tree work, the first thing you have to do is care about trees above all else. And he really instilled that into me, as well as my instructors there, Marshall Bakerroot and Michelle Mitchell, too. Big shout outs to them.
Yeah, all three of them. Amazing people in the industry. So thanks totally. For putting their name out there. People don't. Well, Jeremy, obviously the dude's crazy, but good crazy.
So happy you mentioned him.
Yeah, he's a good crazy that you got to. Once you met him, he's a friend for life. But yeah. Michelle and Marshall, what a to everybody out there listening, they ran a program for almost 30 years in Oakland Community College. That was one of the only ones around that were teaching arboriculture. So. Hats off to them also.
Yeah, Marshall is a wizard, and so is Michelle. In fact, Michelle, I often forget to brag about this, but one of my instructors was the president of ISA. Isn't that nuts? That's so cool.
President. Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, she's a wizard too. They run a consultancy up in Lapeer still, but they're for the most part retired. But it was through my education and experience with Jeremy that I was turned on to taking care of trees. And like you sort of touched on earlier, while working in the big arb machine, we realized that we weren't really doing that to trees.
Yeah, and I think from someone that came as with a Forest Service background, I thought, that's why I got into it. I wanted to help manage and protect these natural areas. And when I kind of got into the field of arboriculture, that was something we connected on, was that this doesn't seem right. We're not being stewards of the environment. At least it didn't feel like that. It felt like, we were feeding the chipper. We were, paying for the boss's vacations.
I guess you could say it's a faux feeling. Because you're still in the tree industry. You're still in the green industry.
Yeah.
You're my saying was always used to be you can get paid for doing the right thing. So that's where you guys come in. Doing the right thing is could be such a debatable instance, or what is the right thing?
Well, and let's talk about that, because both of you gentlemen just talked about big ARB. So in your minds and your definition, just to educate the listeners, what do you kind of classify as big ARB? Kind of one of those production companies that's just out there to do, you know, annual pruning or like you said, feed the chipper. What do you, when you think big ARB, what do you think of?
Corey, I think you nailed it. I, for those interested, shameless self-plug, if you want to learn more about this wider expanded definition, there is an article on our website where you can find that information, treefirst.org. I'm pretty sure it's /big ARB. I think big ARB is the big, it's not just the big production companies, but I think they're a large part of that, but it is that framework of that business model that almost all other tree companies emulate, where you need to have big trucks, big chippers, you have to make big cuts, you have to get this big overhead. It's the machine that is the, unfortunately, currently the only example that tree companies have to build their business on, or their business model on.
You know what? You're right, because it's always, you got to grow or die. So it's bigger, next size chipper, more wood, you know, and then it goes right back to TCIA. You walk around that trade show, and if you want to buy a forestry unit, or if you want to buy a new, say, 18-inch chipper, you're looking at $500,000 investment.
Oh yeah, and how are you going to make that? I mean, you got to feed the chipper.
Yeah,
that's where
they don't run, they don't pay the bills.
Yeah.
So part of it is, I'm trying to think of the word. It's big ARB is, it's like a disease, I guess. You got to keep putting that salve on it so it don't spread, but then it keeps spreading, so you need to get more salve. It just keeps growing. No, I understand it needs to grow to survive, and these companies that are big with, say, 400 employees, you know, let's go to the top.
Yeah.
You got to turn that chipper. You got to keep the lights on. So you may have to do things that you wouldn't generally do if you were a smaller, modest company. I don't even think smaller. I don't think smaller is a good word. I think, Jeremiah, you said it, a refocused
company. Different set of priorities. And that's kind of the next question, Joe. Perfect segue into this is, how are you different than Big ARB? What are you two doing? I think that's where you're going, Joe, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know what? Yeah, we know that if you got big equipment, you got to make big paychecks. You got to keep that pay, or they're going to come get it. It ain't no different than not paying your car payment.
And I think in a cliche sense, we prioritized quality over quantity. So the quality of our work means more than the amount of production we're actually doing. I'd rather spend the time to make sure that the job is completed to the, you know, scopes and really work with purpose versus make sure just the customer is satisfied. I get my money so I can move on to the neighbor's house and, you know, shear their bushes the way that they want them in a lollipop shape. And then quick, move on to his neighbor, tell him that, we'll be here all season. So if you need those trees done, you know, we really like to work with purpose and prioritize, quality over quantity of work, I'd say.
So you guys aren't doing too many topiaries?
What's that?
You're not doing too many topiaries? Topiaries doing Mickey Mouse out of someone's front boxwood hedge?
No,
but I will say there is a customer we used to have that had we didn't do this, but they had a nice topiaried elephant out of an arborvitae. It's pretty impressive, actually.
Wow.
All right.
I think if I may, I want to build on what Jack said too. Part of that quality that we focus on is emphasizing information and disclosing every bit that we can so that the customer can kind of walk themselves into the right decision with their trees rather than us saying, oh yeah, we could open it up, give them some arbitrary instruction, rather, hey, this may be a bad idea because X, Y, and Z. And then through fully disclosing what can happen to their tree if we go with their idea, it allows them to ask us then the questions of, okay, well, you know, what does my tree actually need?
Yeah. So you're,
really it's emphasis on disclosure
and transparency, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's educating, but as you're educating, and here's something that I'm picking up on, cause this is what I do, you know, Joe and I do for a living, but you're educating, but you're also training your customer.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well said.
Well, you know what? I asked you this. I didn't want to go to this right away, but we can. When we were at TCI, I made you guys answer the question, how do you get it done? You know, it's easy to say, we got to keep educating our customers. We got to keep educating. You guys hit the nail on the head at TCI. And I think you included that in your little, hey, we're going to show up on the podcast, little clip. But you guys nailed down on the head. And I think I'm going to let you guys answer it. How do you make it happen? You can't just rely on educating your customer.
I think you just said we just got
to
do it.
Yeah, you have to implement it. And that's where the benefit of being a small operation comes in, is that we can walk away from jobs that we know either the customer is really difficult, or the job is just above our scope of equipment, or we just don't want the job. If somebody wants to cut their tree in half, let's say, and if we do our best to try to talk them out of it and they still won't budge, we're fine with letting Joe Schmo down the street take care of it.
Yeah, companies.
Yeah, like you're not hiring us to do that. And I think when you refuse to do work, it does make that homeowner sort of scratch their head and think this guy's just walking away from money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me a $2,500 butcher job. And you're like, I don't want it. And they're like, really? $3,000? No, I'm not going to do it. And you just peel off there, and then they get someone else to do it. Then when they do it, finally get it done, they're looking at it like, oh my God, I should have listened to Jack and Jeremiah because that tree looks like shit.
Well, that's so smart, because not only are you training and educating your customers, but you're also picking them, which for the business owners out there, and for the entrepreneurial minded people that are listening, that's huge. You're picking your client base. That's massive.
This is something that we talk about a lot. Our customers are awesome. I really, it's few and far between that we've ever had difficult clients, but
I think we've walked away from three in our now 4 years of doing business. We've walked away from three jobs where we're like, look, we just can't find a way to win here.
Well, and the tree can't win, and you all are working with people who see the value and they understand the science because of the educating that you've done for them. So I want to know, how do you find people like that? How do you find your customer?
You want to take this one?
Well, I think in some ways we look at our customers or our clients as the trees we're working for, not so much the person themselves. We're employed for trees. We're outfitted for trees, and that's our priority. Of course, you know, we are polite to our customers and stuff, but yeah, I think we look through the lens of the tree being our clients, not so much trying to, you know, make sure, you know, Billy is happy. It's really about what's best for the trees. And feel free to elaborate on that. I don't know if that's...
No, you nailed it. I think when we present ourselves through that lens, people see it immediately.
Yeah,
we don't have to convince them really of anything.
Yeah, they know that we actually mean this, and we stand for it. There's not we're not giving you a sales pitch. We're not trying to convince you what's good. We're not trying to convince you of anything.
Yeah,
so that kind of segues right into unintentionally is the name of the company.
Yes.
So you explained it without even explaining what Tree First even meant.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah. If you haven't seen that video that Corey and Joe are referring to, that we were writing all of the website copy, and I kept saying that phrase, and finally I was like, I think that's the name. And it presents the philosophy in two words.
What about, obviously it's a redheaded woodpecker. Where did Woody come from? Whose favorite bird is that?
Well, that was an emphasis trying to just be different. Every tree company has, you know, a tree as their logo. And we did have a couple other experiments too with a dead tree.
Yeah, our first logo was a snag.
Yeah, we were trying to make a dead tree the center of our logo, and it just, you know, we went through a couple different renditions and it just wasn't it, you know, but we played around and eventually we got this really awesome.
We commissioned it from an artist. We wanted a more modern look because that's kind of how we feel in the industry, is that we're trying to push towards a more modern approach. And we thought that the snag, while it looks cool, didn't have the brandability that the simple bird in the circle has.
Yeah.
Brandability. I kind of like that. But you're right, because the whole goal was trees provide habitat for nature. So it's all connected. Every living organism is connected one way or another. So the snags, you guys talk about snags, some of the wildlife habitat that you guys have created, it's been pretty cool. So you gotta admit that. And I was just kind of not picking fun at you, but just trying to prod the conversation about how different the logo is, because you can walk around TCI had 3,000 people there and it all got trees.
I think it had 5,000 people at it.
Yeah.
And they all have 5,000 trees. And it's different. It's a memorable, and it's a very classy, brand for you guys. So keep up the good work on that. It looks awesome.
Well, thanks.
Thanks. Well, if I can expand on one more thing, I think what we've talked about so far is still kind of opaque to a listener who isn't very familiar with us. In that, something we talked about earlier was being able to walk away from jobs. You can't do that if you have the big R business model. Something Jack and I are currently developing, without spoiling too much, we're working on a business model that is, for lack of better terms, smaller, sleeker, and more modern for the arborist who may be interested in going out on their own and starting a small operation.
Yeah, and I think there's just not many examples to follow. We only have Big Arb as the primary framework for what a tree business can be, and we're kind of hoping to set an example for, you know, other people to follow on as independent arborists. We want to encourage people to get creative with their work. I mean, I think I'm speaking for both of us. This has been genuinely fun to do.
Yeah.
And we think other people deserve that in their careers. And, we're kind of an
open source.
Yeah. Talk to us.
Corey, I know you're probably having a hard time envisioning how cool this is, and I know our listeners are. So if I may, gentlemen, I'm going to paint a picture of Tree First coming onto the job. So you give these guys a call. And first of all, they're both amazing climbing arborists too, with a real desire and passion for the science side. And why is this tree ill? So this van shows up, white van. Everything that they need to do that job is in that van, right down to the small chipper, because they don't do big wood. So the chipper's in there, the cleanup, the saws, they're moving over to electric saws for less carbon footprint. They all show up in the van, they get out, and it's all professional, all in one small little package. And if they need a trailer for something, they'll get a trailer for that day. But it's like the trench coat where you open up. We got all this in here, and we got all of this. We can take care of it. It's just amazing that how much you guys can get done in the 4 years that you have in the van, and just a smaller van. You don't need the big equipment. Most of the times when you guys chip, the chips stay. You guys do a good job on just minimal impact for the biggest response on low impact. So it's pretty cool. Well, so just imagine that van pulls up like a Scooby-Doo van. You guys come piling out.
Mystery machine.
Yeah, mystery machine. What do you got? Oh, yeah, we got that right here. Let's take care of it.
So, Jack, Jack and Jeremiah, I do want to pay you a compliment, because Joe and I work with, you know, we work with hundreds of companies. We see it all. We you know, we know what big ARB is. And I think one of the big impressions that a lot of some of these larger companies are trying to convey to their clientele is, hey, we're just a boutique tree service, you know, looking out and trying to put, you know, trying to do the right thing. But you two are actually doing it. And as somebody who's been in the industry for a minute, not as long as Joe, you are the future. Everybody talks about being that boutique tree service that can specialize in picking their clientele and picking their jobs. And I truly believe that the future, especially if the labor, you know, shortage and everything else goes the way that it's projected, I do believe that you are the future. I do believe that subcontractors and boutique tree care outfits are the way of the future. So I'm excited, without a spoiler alert, and I don't know what you have cooking in the background, but I'm excited to see where you go and more importantly, the influence that you have on Big ARB, on the industry.
That's really nice.
Thank you so much.
They're getting asked to speak at conventions now. You know, old guys like me are not even asked anymore. Now they're asking these guys to speak, because what they got going is making an issue. Now, I know we got to wrap up, because technically I could talk to you guys all night long. But some of the, you guys, you don't have to mention it until it happens, but you guys are investing in some pretty cool tools for the future of Tree First. You guys want to spill a little bit, or maybe a little teaser? You don't have to say too much. But I think it falls right in line with why you're doing what you're doing. Let's just make sure it's the right candidate to do A, B, and C with. So you need specific tools to do that.
Yes. And those tools are not just your eyeballs. Sometimes the hint I'll say is sometimes you need to look inside of the tree before you cut it down to get the full image of what's going on.
Don't
blow the law. I don't want to wreck nothing, but I think it's an exciting platform for you guys to get a little teaser out there, so people have to keep an eye on you to see what you got coming.
So as we're bringing this conversation to a close, and maybe we go one at a time, Jeremiah, then Jack, or whatever you want to do, just take 30 seconds to a minute. If you could leave an impact on somebody who's just getting into the industry, or maybe considering going off and doing their own thing, what advice would you give them?
If I had a friend who was working for a company who was considering going off on their own, I would tell them the first thing that you ought to do is make sure that you have good presentation skills. And that includes not just speaking, but also your website, your social media presence. All of those things are kind of a little bit left behind in most Big ARB or tree workers. I think if you can bring your practice up to modern speed, that will carry you pretty far, actually.
And with what he said, I'm just going to say, just like we said, just do it. It's worth it. It doesn't always make sense all the time. You know, you're going to run into issues. You're going to run into problems, and you have to get creative with it, but that's what makes it all worth it in the end. And
I have an addendum, actually. Can I add a little bit more to what I said?
Yeah, you got
the you don't have to be the best to go out on your own. Most jobs do not require you to be the best. You don't have to be Kevin Bingham to do a little bit of reduction over the driveway. You know, if what's holding you back from going off on your own is lack of confidence in some skill set, don't sweat it. You don't have to be the best. You have to be willing to learn, and you have to know where to find that information.
And you have plenty of opportunity to learn those things that you might not be as confident on. And I think we can both be testaments of that.
Totally.
So, yeah.
That's cool. Well,
just so you guys know, you'll be learning the rest of your lives. So don't ever stop that hunger to figure out why, and why we do it that way. And we could do it so much better and so much safer and so much easier. keep that mindset, and you guys are going to go a long way.
Thanks, Joe. I
appreciate it, Joe.
Awesome. Jack, Jeremiah, really appreciate having you on. If there's anything that Joe and I can ever help you with, please don't hesitate to reach out. We'll make sure that we put your website in the show link, in the show notes, and let people find you from there. But truly, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for doing what you're doing, and thanks for being guests on our podcast.
We're right back at you, Corey. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Peace.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, and lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.